Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor.
Begin the day with a friendly voice, a companion unobtrusive.
And here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Special thanks to Ben and Deanna Malcor being in here, Brian Miltz and Tim Marquardt talking about getting officials for high school sporting events, which is very important. We've got Stephanie Hummel, City of Green Bay Planning Commissioner, coming up, and Cody Kreplein, about a great veterans project he's involved with that also sounds delicious. But right now, Nina Sparano.
Good morning.
Do you like how I did
that? Hi. Every time you say my name, it sounds a little different.
Sounds cool.
I heard it earlier, Nina Sparano.
I know. I screwed that one up a little bit. I don't know why.
No, I like it. I like a little variety.
Aren't you glad that I didn't like freak you out today?
Well, you usually do.
I know.
Sneak up behind me and always scare me.
At the Friday night game, she's getting set
he
to go on
all the
air,
time.
And I'll stand like right behind her and just go, hi.
He's the creepy guy that kind of comes up behind me. He'll tap me on the shoulder.
Yes.
Nina,
hi.
Hi.
Makes you feel any better. You're not the only one.
That doesn't surprise me.
How you doing, Nina?
I'm fantastic. I'm good.
Great to have you here.
I'm awake.
Got the kid. What are the kids doing?
The kids at summer.
Summer.
You know, actually, one of my kids is off in summer camp in the UP.
Where?
Camp Badawagama, which I love to
say. I don't know where that one is.
It's just one of those classic camps, like straight out of 1955.
Is that like up near Big Bay?
It's in Iron County, Michigan.
Oh, Iron County. Okay.
Yeah, Crystal Falls.
Oh, beautiful area.
Oh my God.
It's beautiful area.
It's beautiful. I feel so lucky we found this place. She's having the time of her life.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good for her. Good for
jealous.
Her. Yeah. We've had some of your NBC 26 folks on.
No.
You know, we like the fact that they're in neighborhoods, or they're not neighborhoods, in one community, and really try to get to know that community.
And they do. I mean, they are immersed, and they know the people. I was in Manitowoc for the SS Badger the other day when it had its first launch, and that's Preston Stober's neighborhood. And we were standing there, and everyone's like, oh, Preston. We were just, I mean, everybody knew Preston.
I think that's so important.
He's focusing on the community. He knows the community, and they know him.
Yep.
It was really fun to watch it.
Great idea.
Did you go over to Ludington?
Not at that time, but.
Okay, you've done that? That's a great family.
We did the day crew.
Yes. I saw it the other day.
I took my husband for Father's Day. My husband and my kids, we took the day cruise, but about a month later.
Play a little bingo.
Such a neat experience.
Absolutely.
It's an awesome experience.
Walking around the inside of the ship and learning the history of the ship. We had such a good time. What a cool thing
I'm glad they keep that going because it was on the bubble for a little while, but I mean, it's just great that, I mean, it's not the cheapest thing to run, but it's just a great attraction for both Manitowoc and Ludington. They both participate. So it's great.
And it's great for the city. I mean, it's great tourism dollars. It's good for everybody.
Yeah. Well, again, when you're talking about the other thing about the different, where you put somebody in a community, I'm sure, where did you start your career?
Oh gosh. Well, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio originally. My first job was in Missoula, Montana.
Okay. Mine was Twin Falls, Idaho.
Yeah.
Which was like, I think owned by the same company maybe even to be honest
actually,
with you.
It's owned by Scripps.
Yeah, it is now anyway. Yeah.
Not at the time, but.
But you know how that is when you go to a new community, you don't know anybody, you don't know, okay, there's a new yada yada happening, who do I talk to?
Uh-huh.
But wouldn't that have been nice to have just one area and now just focus on this area and learn all the
Missoula, Montana, there is only one area.
Yeah. Isn't that funny, though, how we all started in such small little places?
I loved it. I needed it, though.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was so different from the way I grew up. I mean, I grew up in, you know, the suburbs of Cleveland, Ohio, and then I move out west, and it truly was the Wild West. I mean,
absolutely.
Missoula is, you know, there's a university there. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like in the middle of nowhere, but it was so different. The lifestyle was different.
Yep. People literally wore cowboy hats and cowboy boots.
I mean, tumbleweed rolling across the street. I mean, it was awesome. And people were so nice and so welcoming. It was a beautiful small community. It really just was a great way to start my life as an adult, really.
Do you remember what market you were? Because I think Twin Falls was 205, and I think they were like
210. 169, I think,
you were
170.
Big.
All
right.
I wanted to talk about how you got there. Cleveland, I had some really good friends in Shaker Heights.
Oh, gosh. See, what a beautiful city,
and
isn't it?
That's a suburb, but they love it there. And they love Green Bay, too, though. I want to say that when they've been up to Green Bay, and they're like, this is a great community, but they've never moved. What got you to move here? What was it that attracted
it's
you?
It's a roundabout kind of way. I started in Missoula, Montana. That was my first job as the morning anchor and producer. And then I got a job in Colorado Springs as their—
That's a nice place.
Blanket. Oh, spectacular.
Is that where the Air Force Academy is?
Yeah. It just, I've always wanted to live in Colorado. And I got a job in Colorado Springs. And what a beautiful— I mean, Pikes Peak is in the middle of town. Yeah. It's 14,000 foot mountain. You stare at it every day. It's just spectacular city. And I was weekend anchor there and then moved up to their evening anchor for— that was probably there for 5 or 6 years.
Oh, wow.
And then I moved to Fox 31 in Denver. So I was at— I had a variety of jobs there for— and then I went to CBS4 in Denver, kind of jumped across the street after one contract to another. And at that time, I had my youngest daughter, Lila, and she was a year and a half, two. And then I found out I was pregnant with my second daughter. And my husband got a job opportunity in his career. He's in finance. And he got a job offer in Louisiana. And we thought about, what are we going to do? What, you know, should we take it? And we decided to take it. So I took some time off. We moved to southern Louisiana. We were there for 2.5 years. And then he got another promotion to move up to Appleton. And we have— it was time to go. And he's from La Crosse, so it was a no-brainer.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
We were Midwesterners. We wanted to get back up here. We wanted to go to Wisconsin. And it was— we started packing before they even made the offer. We were so excited to go. I mean, living in the South was, you know, a fun trip. It was like a nice long vacation, but we were so ready to come back.
Is she lying?
Well, where were you in Louisiana?
I'm lying. I am. I'm lying.
Oh, no, man.
It was tough.
You're lying about the part that you really— Todd lived in Mississippi.
Yeah. A little bit different.
Oh, that's north. That's north.
But it's south, too, compared to being here, you know?
Yes. Right. Louisiana is living on their own.
Yeah.
They do things their own way, and they have their own lifestyle, and they're happy as clams. It's just so different from the way I grew up. We blended in. We did all the festivals. We ate the food. We had the culture. We made the friends.
Did you suck the heads out of the crawfish?
We've had that conversation.
You
here,
didn't do so, it? Okay.
No, I was pregnant during this time. The smells.
Because one of our what's Lisa's title?
Well, Lisa's our news bureau chief here in Northeast Wisconsin, and she lived down there. She's from Michigan, but lived in Louisiana. And so, she was in Bastrop, kind of the northern part of the state.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar. I was in Lafayette.
Lafayette.
Which is west of Baton Rouge, about an hour west of Baton Rouge.
Which is, they have a college. Mm-hmm. They're a pretty good football team.
Mm-hmm. Great football team.
And isn't that where Jake DeLome played? Was quarterback of the Ravens when they went to the Super Bowl that year? They've had a couple that have made it to the pros.
Yeah.
Lafayette. Louisiana Lafayette.
I'll say sure, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
So Lisa just texted. She said, tell her Monroe, Louisiana. Okay, so that's where she was from.
Monroe. Yeah. That's a Duck Dynasty territory, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good call.
Yeah. That's Louisiana. That's real Louisiana. I was more in like the city. Lafayette's like the big city, you know, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. So
we have Ace Champions. You know Ace? He's a local musician, he's a phenomenal musician and a phenomenal cook. And he's from down there and he's big into like the Creole food.
Oh,
and he's telling us about the difference between Creole versus Cajun.
Yeah.
They're very different.
They are very different. We did it all. We were down, 2.5 years. We did it all. We really both tried everything. But again, my husband, Jared, got the opportunity to move to Appleton. We have family in La Crosse, and it was, let's go.
Yeah.
But no matter where you live, you got to lean in to really learn it. Because, Pete, there are stereotypes out there, although I do want to say some of them are true. I've been fortunate. I've been in every state and really been there. And they're all unique, but you got to look a little harder in some places than others. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what you have down, and, I knew the mayor of Baton Rouge really well, and we'd been down there. It's an awesome city.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an awesome city. And you're always in the shadows of New Orleans, which you really shouldn't be. I mean,
New Orleans is so, it's an urban metropolis. There's so much happening. It doesn't feel like the real Louisiana feel because there's so much happening. So many people, there's so much culture from different parts of the country. So, but you know, when you're in Baton Rouge and you're in Lafayette, it's everyone's born, raised, bred. They're from there. So when we moved, we were the outsiders.
I'll bet.
Where are you from? There were Northerners. They called us Yankees. I mean, it was, they did. I mean, it was, but we lived in the beautiful community, met some wonderful friends who I still keep in touch with.
So what do you think here? You're here in Green Bay. Now you've been here, how many years?
We moved here in 17.
Okay, so you've been here for a while.
But I had to move back. I mean, there's nothing like Midwestern people. I'm again from the Midwest. My husband's from the Midwest. And just when we moved back here, it was just like tears of joy, just to feel that awesome. Like Midwestern welcome. You know, we work hard, we play hard. Like it felt like home immediately.
But you know what I liked about it when I moved? Because I moved, you know, I went to school in Arizona, then worked in Idaho, then worked back in Arizona, then Flint, Michigan.
Mm.
And I remember, I remember coming into Green Bay for the job interview type thing. And I remember thinking, there's two types of Midwest. There's the Flint Midwests and Saginaw and those, you know, where it's more industrial and Rust Belt.
Sure.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But coming up here, it's like, wow, this is everything was so green and there wasn't garbage alongside the roads in. It was just like lush and everything. It's like, this is the Midwest I remember.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember when I moved from Tucson to Flint and people were like, oh, I bet it's great being back in the Midwest. And it's like,
So with all that said, and you being here since 17, now Johnny will tell you that you belong in politics because you're a cheerleader for the community. You're smart. You're good looking. And I think that can all help, you know?
Todd?
I can
say
that. Do
you have the creepy guy alert button here?
I don't go up behind her and whisper in her ear. I just look her right in the eye and say,
but
well,
you know what, you still win that category.
I do that on purpose because I'm usually mad at her on Friday nights. Because what do you always forget that I've asked you to bring to every game?
Hairspray.
Yeah.
I do. I pack light. What can I say?
Yeah.
You need hairspray?
For what?
On the windy, blustery nights?
Yeah. I give up. I mean, the wind wins. Forget the hairspray.
John, you get a lot more to do before. Okay, well, anyway,
you were saying.
I want to know what your plans are.
My plans for life?
Just like you're
stay
here.
Tuned.
You're on 26. Mm-hmm. Is that some people transition out of the media? Some people go to New York, Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a very interesting, changing field.
Mm, yes. Are you offering me a job?
No. I'm curious as to...
Yes, be here at 5:45 every morning.
I kind of want to know what you want to do, and then I also want you to comment a little bit on if someone wants to get into media, your advice for them. You've traveled, you've moved a lot.
That's a lot, for this business.
That's what I wanted, though. I was born and raised in Cleveland and never moved, and I wanted to tour the country. So
were you married when you went to your first job?
Nope.
Oh, you're on your own, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, that's kind of scary.
It was awesome.
Good for you.
You got to be open-minded for sure.
Totally.
You got to be open-minded, willing to work hard, willing to work some holidays, and make sure you love it. You got to really love it.
It's such an acid test that it gets almost like the Marines or something. We're going to make it really, really hard early on. Do you really want this?
Yeah. Truly. And it's just fun.
We're going to set a quick break. Nina Sparano, NBC 26 with us. Back after this. Hey, welcome back. Mino the Mayor here on a blustery Wednesday morning. No comment?
Oh, I was reading. I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
blustery.
Sorry, I did. Yes.
Nina Sparano, our very special guest, talking about her career in TV and, of course, now at NBC 26.
I would put you as successful in the media business. I think people look to you and you're very well known and you've been in it for what, 10 years?
Nice. No, much longer.
Oh, but okay.
Yeah, there's an error on that website. All right. I started my career in 2001.
Oh.
Yeah, right before September 11th. I was actually on the air when September 11th happened.
Were you really?
I was.
I was too on radio. Mm. I was on IXX with Murphy and we had a TV in the studio and that first one had hit. And as that second one hit, and people still talk about this, everybody said, we're at war. We're getting attacked.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's no question of that. That was the most eerie morning of my career.
I was watching, you know, I was in Missoula, Montana. We didn't have staff. It was just me and the weatherman and the director. And I would read Associated Press alerts on the air when they would hit my computer. And, you know, they have color-coded alerts. And if it's orange, you're like, okay, it's a little something to worry about. But if it's red, big deal. And the red alert came up, fire at the World Trade Center. I'm like, okay, I'll read that on the air. And then you hit a bing again, and bing, 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 and then all these alerts. And I'm like, and then I got the tossed a network. And we tossed a network, and then we watched it with everybody else.
Yeah. Wow.
Just what an experience.
You know, I was reading a thing about, who's the guy that came here for the National Medal of Honor Convention? Then he got fired because he lied about what he did in Iraq.
Brian Williams?
Yes. Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember him when he spoke, he was talking about, and people are like, wow, you're making, you know, millions of dollars and you're flying anywhere. He goes, yeah, but let me tell you something. He said, everybody in this business, unless they're born with the silver spoon in their mouth, you know, born on third base and act like they hit a triple. There's been moments in your career where it's like, I don't want to do this. This is ridiculous. I could get a job doing so. He said for him, he was working this really tiny market in Kansas, and he had to use his own car to go on two stories. And he was out trying to find this farm, whatever, and his car broke down in the middle of this farm, cornfield, and there was nobody around. There were no cell phones. And he's like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, but then you have the good days.
I know, but everybody has that one day, I think.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, we have
what?
All the time. But you get the highs overpower the lows. When you have those good days, you tell those amazing stories, or that, you know, as a journalist, you kind of get a backstage pass to all these incredible events, like the Republican National Convention. I mean, to witness these events in person, it makes it all worth it.
Great point.
Well, you're obviously being fulfilled. You wouldn't have stuck in it for 20 years.
I know.
I said 10.
It's like Survivor, though. I mean, all the people I went to college with and my first job with, I mean, none of them are in the business.
Absolutely.
Right. I want to get to that because although I will say kids today, and when I say kids, in fact, in the later 20s, they take different careers. You know, they may go into journalism like you, and then what scares me a little bit is that they may be a physician and then go into something else, you know, and leave a career that was very expensive to get into. But I think they're entitled to that. Whereas, you know, Johnny's been in this business 40 years. I was in politics for over 20. Encourage is not the right word. What advice? Because I teach at a school, kids always ask about, and I always ask them, you know, what do you want to do? Mm-hmm. And media is always attractive to at least one or two students.
People think it's, you know, glamorous, or it's, you know, there's that other, it's not the glamour of it. It's more of like, and I've heard this before, it's like a calling. It's something like you need to do. And when I got into it, it was like, I'll try this. I feel like I'm good at it. I had in high school, we had a closed circuit television station where we had a whole production studio. We did broadcasts. I was a reporter. I was a hallway reporter. And so I would, you know, I had a camera and a microphone, and I would, you know, interview our students.
In high school.
Yeah. I was very,
cool.
very fortunate.
That was Shaker Heights?
Solon High School. Solon High School.
Wow.
And then
you're a Toledo Rocket after that.
I was.
Very
yes.
Nice. Our good friend Todd Kowalczyk is the head basketball coach there from Green Bay.
Wow.
From DePier. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Great connection.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I just got a feel for it, and it lit me up being a part of, you know, asking people questions and being on camera, and I just felt that, like, you know, that's lifting up my soul. I just felt that connection, and I couldn't not do it, and it was never an option to do anything else, and that's how I knew I needed to stay.
That's awesome.
I like that, and I think you can't explain what you just said, although you did a pretty good job of it, but that calling,
mm-hmm.
you know,
it truly is.
It is. And when you feel that, and people will say to you, are you nuts? You're going to give up.
Oh,
what
I get
doing?
That all the time.
Right. To do this and be up at four in the morning or three in the morning for some of you guys. Standing out when you started, I mean, it's not, you're right. The glamour isn't there. I mean,
now it's
anchor and what you do now, but you know, standing, we were talking about the people who get the weather report, standing in the slush. You know, that have to go out in the winter.
I do that too.
I know you did. That's my point.
I got you one quick glamorous story. When I think it was at Channel 5 at the time. And it was Channel 5 at the time. And I forget who the morning anchor was. And I was going to do a fishing story. And I said, hey, meet me down at the station. I'll get all the gear. We're going to go. The guy goes, oh my God, could I meet, I'm never going to say who the morning anchor was. Okay. He goes, oh my God, my wife even knows. That's, you know, if anything happens to her, boy, I got, you know, I mean, I just adore her, love her. She's so gorgeous and blah, blah, blah. Okay. We're walking by the makeup room and he goes, hey, John. Hey, so-and-so. Curlers in her hair, curling iron, no makeup, pajama pants, old hoodie. Okay. And she's like, and the guy goes, who's that? And it was that. And he goes, no, it wasn't.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, it was. He goes, no, it wasn't. I'm like, yeah, it is. I said, do you think they wake up and go like that at home? And I said, they come in here and just, oh, wow, never look at her the same way. I mean, she's so attractive.
My goodness.
But you know what I mean? It's like you pull back the curtain of what really happens in a TV station.
Yeah. I suppose. It's like I said, it's not the glamorous job, certainly. Like you said, you know, standing in the slush and the, you know, it's 25 below and you're talking about the weather. I mean, it's a tough job, and it's something you need to do, and
You know what you need to, we were talking about this earlier. Like Jim was talking about, I forget what subject we were talking about. And he said, oh, the with real estate. Yeah, you know, if a news reporter does a story for 2 or 3 minutes on it, you still can't. I said, 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah, I wish.
I wish. I said a minute 20 maybe.
Minute 20 is pretty good.
And not to be critical of the media, because we're in it, but the guy who owns our company felt that not enough attention was being paid locally. I think you guys are doing a pretty good job of that at 26 with the neighborhood focus that you have. But people need to know what's going on in their community, the local. And in TV, you've got the national, you got the weather, you got the sports. You really don't have time like us where we can really sit down for 20 minutes and really talk about what's going on with the United Way, what's going on with the Red Cross, what's going on with our next guest, what's going on with neighborhood planning. And those things... I mean, I think you guys have so much to do in such a little bit of time.
And that's our survival. I mean, you can turn on, you know, all the streaming, whatever, social media, whatever, but are you really going to find out what's actually happening when it's happening in your neighborhood?
Right.
I mean, you can find out what's happening in Milwaukee. You can find out what's happening across the
from
country.
From people with boots on the ground.
Right. And in the Gaza Strip. I mean, it's just, it's crazy how little time we spend on what's really, really important. But you know, I don't run the station, but I think Sage is really onto something, as is 26, of let's talk what's going on locally. Mm-hmm. It helps.
And it matters.
It matters. Mm-hmm. It helps the politicians, you know, be a little bit more accountable.
And it helps you feel connected to your community. I mean, with all this social media connection, we've never felt more disconnected with where we live and what we're doing and who we live next to. But when you're talking about local and what's happening in your community, then you feel connected to each other and then you feel connected to your community. And then just,
and again, I think that's a great job you guys are doing, having those reporters pretty much embedded in a community.
And they love it.
I love it. Yeah.
Cool.
Nina, it's great seeing you.
Thank you.
You can be at the Friday Night Lights at all and the showdowns.
We'll be there.
All right.
We'll
those are always fun nights, aren't they, though?
Just don't sneak up on this.
Well, bring hairspray and I won't have to.
I'll spray you with it next time.
Nina, yeah, be like Mace.
Nina, it is so easy to get a restraining order. Just I'll help you out.
Thank you for
Nina
the advice.
Nina Sperano, NBC 26. Thank you for what you do for the community.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for being here. We'll be back after this.
From the Apple Store or Google Play Store, and text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here at 97.9 FM WGBW, 98.3 FM WISS in Oshkosh, and of course the Civic Media app. 62 degrees in Green Bay, 63 in Appleton, 61 in Oshkosh. Brewers at the Cubbies at 12:45 today on WISS. Has some great guests today. Brian Miltz and Tim Marquardt talking about the need for more sports officials in the greater Green Bay area. Ben and Deanna Malcor always talking their expertise about local real estate. And Nina Sperano from NBC 26, who is just phenomenal. Isn't she, Todd? Just great for a guest.
Yeah. I mean, and one of the things she was saying was like, when you can actually make a difference by telling a community story, that's wonderful.
Yep.
That's absolutely what it's all about.
We'll talk about telling city stories.
Do you want me to do the Pella testimonial or do you want me to do Stephanie Hummel?
Stephanie Hummel.
I know
Hummel
both of them pretty well.
Okay.
All right. So Stephanie Hummel, who is in the planning department for the city of Green Bay. And I don't think people realize, everybody's like police, fire, DPW. You know, planning is kind of where it's at because you're the future of Green Bay.
I think so, personally. We're only like 1% of the budget for the entire department.
Right.
And we do so much stuff.
Well, and it's important. And what I like about the approach that you're taking, and well, quite honestly, what I took too, was these listening sessions for the long-range plan. And it's just really imperative that people understand how important their input is, because if you've got a good government, they're going to listen to the people and implement the plan.
Yes.
And the plan gets adopted by the planning commission, the city council, mm-hmm. and then it becomes your 15-year plan. 15 years, we got to talk about that now. We're going to be here in 15 years. Just what's the city going to look like? And that's where you come in. So what are you doing to gather some information and put together a comprehensive plan?
So the comprehensive plan, just to back up a little bit, is a guiding document for the entire city. So the planning department kind of leads the charge, but honestly, it impacts everything. It's housing, it's transportation, infrastructure, parks, everything. So we wanted to make sure with this update that we were really going to the public. And that doesn't mean having boring meetings at City Hall that we hope people attend and maybe give their opinion on. We went to 12 community events like farmers markets, any sort of pop-ups we could do all throughout June, And now coming up in August, we are doing neighborhood specific meetings where we're going to people's neighborhoods saying, come here and tell us what you love and what needs work in your neighborhood. And then we'll take all of that data and put it towards that plan. So if people continually say the same thing, we're going to hear that. We're going to prioritize that in the plan. And then that plan is what is used to make policy, to update codes, to create programming. That's kind of the guiding document for the whole city. So we really want people to tell us what they need and what they think.
So you've done these pop-ups at some of these community events, and now you've got more structured. I'll get to that in just a second. But thus far, what have you been hearing from the community on what they think the city needs in the next 15, 20 years?
A lot of people understand the housing crisis. I say crisis because it's nationwide and we all feel it. We feel the effects of not having enough housing, of some housing being too expensive, of the idea that some is way too inexpensive and that's all being crowded together. So there's not just a lack of housing, but where people are putting that housing and how much that housing is costing and the lack of support that people are receiving. But we did a housing study 4 years ago, and in that it showed that we lacked all sorts of housing from the top tier all the way to the bottom. Because if, you know, think of it like the, what is it, hermit crabs that they get rid of their shell and then they go to the bigger one. Like we need that effect here too in Green Bay. So a lot of people talked about that because it's really top of mind for people. They're trying to lease, they're trying to buy. Buying right now is kind of a nightmare. So that was really important to talk about. And that a lot of people talked about transportation, in particular connectivity for people who walk and bike places. They're really feeling the effects of this city being designed for cars and they're not liking it. They want to be able to take their bike. They want to be able to safely walk to a grocery store, to an event, you know, and a lot of places in town, it's not possible. I live downtown, so I can safely walk places, but other areas, it's not possible.
They talk about that 10-minute city where you get anywhere in 10 minutes, you know, walking or biking. And you're right. I mean, that's interesting that, because Green Bay, I wanted to ask you about the demographics of Green Bay. That's got to come into your study because I think it's an aging community. I don't know that, but I just anecdotally, that's what I think. And, and you got to look at that too. I mean, there's baby boomers right now who in 15 years are going to be 80.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we take all the census data.
What are you doing for us?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, that's part of the housing crisis, right? Like, where are those people going to age into? How do they, because some of their homes are not built for it, you know? So we have to think about where are they going to want to go? Where are they going to want to live? How are we going to get amenities close to those locations? You know, we can't just keep making, you know, facilities for them that are on the way outskirts of town because then they have no ability to connect with their community. There's no grocery stores out there. There's no coffee shops. So they're just sitting in these apartment complexes. So it's about thinking of how they interact with their communities too.
And how tied are you to the school district? I mean, I see they just got a referendum coming up for $1 zillion again. And to, I don't know if it's what, I have to look more at that. I'm going to have somebody on here from there, but I mean, schools, parks, that's all part of the city plan. And are they part of this group?
We have interacted with the school in particular to get feedback from students, actually. We always find that these plans really miss, you know, that 18 and under demographic. And even like, you know, 22 and younger, because they don't feel that they need to give their opinion about the next 20 years because they're not going to be here. They're not sure where they're going to be. So we really tried to make sure that we were hitting that demographic. And I know that we've gotten feedback from elementary school students about what they love, what they don't love. We did an entire event at Kids Day. We got 400 people there to interact and give us their opinions by telling us their favorite things. So we're really trying to make sure this plan does work for the people who will be not students in 20 years.
They don't see themselves being 40. Or 35. That's like those are old people. But I remember when I would talk to students, high school students is where I spent a lot of time. But like, what was your favorite place you went? I mean, besides Disney World, we're not going to build that. But, you know, some people were like totally into Indianapolis and some of the stuff they have. And that's very cool. There's a lot of great cities. But that's, I'm glad you're doing that because the demographics here in Green Bay, I mean, really in 20 years, it's going to be, we have an aging population. I'm glad you're talking to them about where do they want to live? Do they want to live on the outskirts of town or they want to live in the city where it's walkable? And it sounds, well, it'd be interesting. You've got a lot of sessions coming up.
Yes, we have 8 coming up starting next Wednesday. So these are all based on neighborhood specific things. So we have these districts that we've created just for this plan that don't really align with any other district. So it can be a little confusing, but there is an online map on our website, which is gobiggreenbay.com. And on there, you can find which neighborhood is closest to you. You can go ahead and figure out where that location is. And at those meetings, it's going to be really specific to neighborhoods. Like what problems do you see in your neighborhood? What intersections don't work for you? Why don't they work for you? What's your favorite thing about your neighborhood that you want to maintain? Those really important questions that only people who live there can tell us. You know, we can guess because, you know, I've lived here for a long time, but I don't know. I don't know what corner is the most safe feeling to children. I don't know which, you know, church everyone goes to.
You know, that's what I was going to say, though, because there are houses that would be middle class type houses. I mean, well kept from over the years and whatever, but there's a lot of publicity sometimes about the crime and drugs and things like that and, you know, that kind of stuff that happens in certain neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. What can be done to combat that? Because, I say this a million times when I was in real estate, there were times I'd take people, we'd look on the MLS, and it's like, oh, look at this house, 3-bedroom, you know, hardwood floors. And there were times where the people wouldn't get out of the house. So this is a scary neighborhood. Mm-hmm. What can be done about these neighborhoods being scary?
I think a lot of that is perception. You know, I didn't always live in Green Bay. And when I didn't live in Green Bay, I lived in Beloit. And that is actually pretty scary. Right. You know, there's a lot of crime there. So I think some of that is just helping people with the perception of it. But also our department, I think this year, started the Office of Violence Prevention, where they have people who go into the community to, like, stop violence before it starts, where they are intercepting people who are likely to cause violence or to be engaged in it somehow and stopping it from the root cause versus just, you know, arresting, just, okay, you know, doing some of the back end stuff. So I think that'll be really helpful in the next 10 years to see, you know, all of that kind of getting implemented.
But that is a factor, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things that are factors for why people choose to stay in Green Bay and why they choose to leave. So even when we're at a farmer's market and someone's like, well, I moved to De Pere. I'm like, tell me why you moved to De Pere. What about Green Bay was not satisfying to you? So that way we can use that information to make a better plan for people.
You know, that's great. That, and you're super easy to talk to, but you can't be offended. You know, you really got to go in there wanting to learn.
Yeah. I want to have a whole session just like spill the tea with stuff. Like, I want to know why you hate, you know, like I kind of just want to hear the bad stuff on my own so I can, you know, use that.
And you can turn that into a plan, mm-hmm. but you've got to hear that. I guess I'm interested in this. I thought this was all long-term, but you'll even talk about, we need to turn an arrow at this light. I mean, you're going to listen to the here and now, mm-hmm. as well as the 10, 15 years.
Yes. Because when people give you their day-to-day life and what makes it harder, I know how to take that with all my planning background and say this overall system doesn't work because of X, Y, and Z.
Right.
So I might not go out and put a stop sign up right away, but I'm going to see enough people complaining about traffic in a certain area. And then we're going to do a study and we'll be able to see, okay, this doesn't work because of these issues. You know, so a lot of that day-to-day stuff really builds up to why a lifetime of your neighborhood bothers you.
Right. So you're getting this input from neighbors. Are there some other communities you're kind of studying? I mean, we used to take some road trips, and I didn't do that as much as other people, but is there something that you see that's growing, that's attracting talent, that's in the Midwest?
That's not really our role in this. So we also have we have two consulting teams working on this with us, and they're doing the more like broad study stuff to see what the national trends are, the regional trends, comparing us to other like cities. You know, we're looking, Cheryl always goes to Rochester and she loves it there. And she'll come back and she'll tell stories about Rochester and what they have. And we try to think of that as we're moving forward too.
Oh, yeah, they have Motorola. They've got a couple of huge, huge anchors.
Oh,
there.
Absolutely.
And you need that to make a city. And I want to get to this is kind of neighborhood driven.
Absolutely.
On the commerce side, are they going to talk about what businesses we might need here?
Mm-hmm. So during this input, there's a whole section on economic development. So when you're there, you can say, why don't we have a coffee shop? Where is our place to go shop in our neighborhood? So that way we can see where the gaps really are for people.
And I think Green Bay's done a good job with their park systems. You know, they got 30 some parks.
Oh, our parks
are great.
We heard the positive feedback of the parks hand over fist. Like, you know how many people love Bay Beach?
Yeah.
Everybody loves Bay Beach, and I don't blame them. It's my favorite place. So.
Right. But I'm talking neighborhood parks as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a lot of
those. They're
well kept.
There's a lot of space.
You know, you look in some other places, you know, they'll have a piazza with just one huge park, whereas we took the strategy of a neighborhood park. You know, that was years and years ago, but I think that's healthy for a community.
Absolutely. It's played to our benefit really well because then everyone feels like they have their own little sanctuary.
Right.
Yeah. They have a place where they can gather with their neighbors or their children or whoever.
What will the follow-up be then? So you're having these sessions and they run from everywhere, from the botanical gardens to
all over the city.
All over the city. And how long is this listening session? Not how long is it? What's the length of time for does it go a month or 2 months?
A month. So we start next week on the 31st and they end on August 26th.
Right. And everyone is welcome. Kids, yes. Parents, old people like me.
Everybody.
They're welcome. And you just want their input on what do we need to do here for you to stay.
They'll be run kind of like a workshop. They'll get a little spiel at the beginning. And then afterwards, it's just broken into small sessions where you talk about housing specifically. Then you'll go to another table and you'll talk about economic development. And then you'll go to another table, talk about transportation. So there are 6 topics to hit. And then from there, we'll gather all that information, plug it in with our consulting team from all the other data we've collected, and then they start formulating that plan for us. That gives us that first draft to say, this is what the city is looking for, and this is the direction that they should be going.
Yeah, and that's great. And then there's no, like, it's one of those things where there's no bad ant, there's no, nothing wrong. You can, I remember a guy, though, I got to tell you, just, I just want to warn you, Stephanie, I know you were, we worked together for a little while, but this guy was hell-bent on getting a Space Needle in downtown Green Bay. He went to Seattle.
Who doesn't need one of those?
Huh?
Who doesn't need one of those? Yeah, like,
there's economics to this plan, too, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, you can tell us any idea you want, but we know what the budget looks like. We have the very realistic lens, but we want people to dream big. We want to know what they want the most, you know?
So anyway, there's some cool stuff that will come out of that. And I'm so glad that it's open to anyone and everyone. So why don't you just give us a couple places that you'll be at so we can kind of get a feel for this?
Sure. So on July 31st, we're going to be at Perkins Park. On August 1st, we will be at Triangle Hill. On August 5th, we will be at Astor Park. August 6th, we will be at the Croc Center. August 7th, the Woods. August 15th, the Wildlife Sanctuary. August 21st, at the Botanical Gardens. And August 26th, at Beaumont Park Shelter. And all of these workshops are 6 to 8 p.m. We do have translation services available in Spanish on the 1st and the 6th. And then everyone who attends is entered for a swag giveaway for each of the events.
Oh, wow. Right. Swag on top of free parking.
Yes.
Okay.
We had a local designer, Samantha Merkus, make some of our swag for us. So we're really excited about that. And then everyone who attends gets put into a raffle to win free Lambeau Field tour and Packer Hall of Fame tickets.
This is awesome.
I know.
You're really reaching out.
Yeah.
We're doing our best. Good attendance. You're like I said, you're easy to talk to. You understand planning better than a lot of people I know. And I think this is great for the city, and they should feel connected just in this event alone.
I hope so.
So, well, keep up the good work, Stephanie.
Thank
We're glad
you.
You're there. And I'll probably attend the one at Astor Park.
Perfect. See you there.
All right. All right. Stephanie Hummel, who is with the City of Green Bay Planning Department, listening sessions, long range city planning. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Have a good summer.
Hey, welcome back. Mino and the Mayor here, winding it up on a Wednesday morning. Joining us right now, great friend, veterans advocate, veteran himself from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Working on getting him on.
Oh, okay. Working on getting Cody on for a great benefit type thing he's doing with his brand new company with cooking pork.
He's been on here before, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's great. Look at that dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, and he's got a new endeavor going on, and want to talk a little bit about that, but he's doing all sorts of things. But I also wanted to read something I got here real, just like right now. Hang on 1 second. Talk amongst yourself.
Okay, while you do that.
Here it is. Okay. Let me just hang on.
All right.
Today on this date in 2006, Corporal Stephen Kastner from Cedarburg was killed in action in one of my gun trucks. That's the attack that severely wounded Jeff Vorpal from my platoon. That's from my buddy Tim Lease. Mm-hmm. But yeah, young man from Cedarburg, his very first mission, I know that, in Iraq. And they were based out of Camp Navistar in Kuwait, and they were doing the route security missions, and young guy killed, and a great friend of mine, Jeff Vorpal, suffered severe injuries in that. And the thing that was most surreal is that within hours of that attack happening, it was posted on YouTube. Mm. Yeah. The terrorists, whatever we want to call them, Hajis, a lot of them used to call them, they actually videotaped it and put it on YouTube right away.
Wow.
To talk about how surreal that is. Can you imagine?
Tough on the family.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That was a tough year, 2006 in Iraq. And a lot of guys paid the price. But anyway, that was interesting stuff with Stephanie talking about the city.
It's important. And, we both have been involved in that for some time. And, you off air, we talked about. It's just really important that if people are going to make that effort, that it gets listened to.
Well, I still got to say one thing. I was trying to bring up a point with her about some of the neighborhoods where I've been in the houses, and they're structurally tremendous houses, tremendous, but they have absentee owners and they're renting them out. And that does nothing good for a neighborhood. Nothing. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. And she talks about, I mean, you talk about people who have moved out and you ask them why. It wasn't the structure of the house.
Not never. It's never that. You know?
I mean, some people, because they have steps when they get a little bit older. But, I mean, that's far. It's the neighborhood.
It's
like
the
you
crime
said,
of the neighborhood. They're nervous about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good word for it. Or they don't see real estate appreciating.
Not
and
at all.
And I don't think you should buy a house just for the reason of an investment. But, I mean, you want to live there and enjoy it and sell it for kind of what you bought it for, maybe a little bit more.
But you'd be surprised at how small of a group of people, if you have 3, 4, 5 people on a whole block, a neighborhood basically, if they buy these houses and fix them up real nice, it's amazing how much that does for future buyers.
Yeah, it that's great in theory, but I think sometimes the city's got to step in and fix up that block. And then you get somebody to come in and buy, oh, this area is happening. Like, you go to bigger cities.
Well, we tried doing that. Remember that organization I worked for, Live Here, Love Here, or whatever? Live it, love it.
I think that was more of a marketing program versus a really getting
hands
in there.
Hands on. And
well, look at what, I mean, there's a million cities that have done that. But, you know, places in Atlanta and Charlotte, look what Charlotte did, right?
Yeah.
They just moved. They just redeveloped that whole downtown, and it worked. So,
but they came in and they just said, "Okay, we're just doing this." Boom.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Well, I think they did talk to the city and said, "Look, what do you guys want?" And they said, "Well, we'd like an NFL team. We'd like downtown to be not this. Maybe you can move that housing somewhere else." And they did it. And you know, I think that's great. I was surprised that how many of these sessions they have. That's a lot. I mean, we would hold these things kind of at the Holiday Inn when it was here, and I'll give her a lot of credit. I mean, that's a lot of work they're going to do. And I just hope that, you know, it's respected by the city and that they implement it, because those people, they're the ones who've really got an investment in the city.
Yeah, no question about it. But I mean, so, like I said, some of these neighborhoods could be so great. You know, we're talking about, okay, is there affordable? These houses would be affordable.
They would be affordable. And if you talk about the downtown here, pretty much walkable to stuff.
Absolutely.
Too, and, or,
absolutely.
Bike, or bikeable at least.
Yep.
And I think that's cool to be close.
But it almost seems like some are neglected. Some of those neighborhoods are just sort of neglected.
Yeah.
And again, if they have absentee owners, nobody knows who the owner is. And yeah.
That's really the problem.
Absolutely.
It really is. It's, you know, there are some great renters, but yeah. I'm not going to argue with you. I know plenty about that.
But the thing is, too, it's like, you know, people, the thing gets run down and it doesn't get fixed. So it's like you have no pride in that ownership. You know, and like I was looking at a house with this group where we're talking about flipping a house. Very nice one over by, or it could have been very nice, over by St. Patrick's.
Yeah, that's okay. Nice.
And outside.
That used to be the neighborhood, John.
I know. Okay. I know so many guys my age. That's exactly where they grew up. Uh-huh. That's where they went to whatever. So many. It's unbelievable. There's a lady smoking crack cocaine right outside.
No.
Sitting in her car smoking crack cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, with the crack pipe type thing. And it's like,
right.
How do you get rid of that first before you invest money into something?
Right.
You know, it's like, ah.
I do. It takes everything. It takes, you know, not just Stephanie in the planning department, but, you know, it takes the inspection department. It takes the police.
Right.
It takes the mayor's office.
But isn't it almost like a whack-a-mole, though? You know, you arrest that lady and put her away for 6 months or whatever, and somebody will take her place. Something will take, you know what I mean? It's like,
no.
Seems like there are just certain neighborhoods that are gone. I mean, what do you do?
You can't
deport them, like, you know. You know what I mean? As far as you can't say, well, we're moving you to, you know, out into this part of town or whatever. That's why it's so hard to reclaim some of those neighborhoods.
Right, that redevelopment.
Yes.
Yeah. It's also, I just, conceptually, that can happen. It just, and you look at that, Appleton, Oshkosh, just, there's a lot of communities that have redone neighborhoods. But I want to say, that's an investment. That
no
is a
question.
Huge investment. And are you willing to pay your tax dollars to help this other neighborhood?
I know.
And I am. You know?
I know. But so, I guess what I'm saying is, though, she was talking about there's not affordable housing. There could be. There could be. There are houses. Let's put it this way. There are houses that would be affordable. if people want to live in those neighborhoods.
Yeah.
But if they have little kids, they're nervous about the crime.
And I think that's a good point, because affordable housing, I don't know what your definition of it is, but mine would be starter homes. And I think we lack starter homes. And apartments,
all these homes that were built after World War II?
Right. Those are all starter homes. Right?
Perfect.
1,200. Yep. I mean, you don't need that. You need a yard. You need a couple bedrooms. You got kids. And look, it's
single
not the
car
home forever.
Garage.
Right.
You know, yeah.
It's not forever.
No.
But it's a starter home. And
exactly. And that's what's so hard to
starter
find.
Starter homes in thriving neighborhoods is tough.
Real tough. But that's the only way people could build up equity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, I know you talk about... Some of them look a little bit the same. But
yeah,
they,
no
they're
question.
They're just...
But they were what they were. All these guys came back from World War II,
yep,
and they
built houses.
Absolutely. Manitowoc's like that.
Totally.
Totally like
that.
Yeah,
they are. That's
and a lot of those, they're from the ship workers that came in to build the subs and things
like
that.
We had here, too. Yeah. It was just, you know, that whole St. Patrick's Irish, you know, and just great neighborhood.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that, but it starts with input from the community, and I'm glad she's doing that. So go to the website, the Green Bay, what'd you say it was? Green Bay Neighborhood website, and attend one of those listening sessions, and your input's really needed. So,
yep.
All right, Johnny, we'll see you at EAA tomorrow, right?
We'll see. Todd's working.
Okay.
We'll be back.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Someplace.
All right.